Buddha said. The sages said, respected Suta Goswami, you are completely free from all vice. You are well versed in all the scriptures famous for religious life, and in the Puranas and the histories as well, for you have gone through them under proper guidance and have also explained them. Purport. O Goswami, or the bona fide representative of Sri Vyasadeva, must be free from all kinds of vices. The four major vices of Kali Yuga are 1. Illicit connection with women, 2. Animal slaughter, 3. Intoxication, 4. Gambling, speculative gambling of all sorts. A Goswami must be free from all these vices before he can dare sit on the Vyasasana. No one should be allowed to sit on the Vyasasana who is not spotless in character and who is not freed from the above-mentioned vices. He not only should be freed from all such vices, but must also be well-versed in all revealed scriptures or in the Vedas. The Puranas are also part of the Vedas, and histories like the Mahabharata or Ramayana are also parts of the Vedas. The Acharya or the Goswami must be well acquainted with all these literatures. To hear and explain them is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. Hearing is called Shravan and explaining is called Kirtan. The two processes of Shravan and Kirtan are of primary importance to progressive spiritual life. Only one who has properly grasped the transcendental knowledge from the right source by submissive hearing can properly explain the subject. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Minitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Sagana Raganatam Vitam Stam Sativam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parishana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hori Priye Vancha Kolpitarubhyascha Kripa Sintho Vyevacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Rishiya Uchuhu Twaya Kalu Puranani Seti Hasani Chanaka Akyatanya Pyadhitani Dharma Shastrani Yanyuta. Srila Prabhupada especially comments on this word Anagha. Anagha means sinless. Agha means sinful, sins. And Anagha, freed from all sins. Agha. Aghasura. Yeah.
Punjate te tukham. Punjate te
agham.
Agham papam. Yes. So agha means sinful. Anagha, sinless. So there are four kinds of sinful activities. Striyam sunam. What is that? Striyam sunam dutam panam yatra dharma chaturvita. These are identified in Srimad Bhagavatam as illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. Srila Prabhupada says these are like the pillars of sinful life. When the pillars are pulled down, then the whole building collapses. There may be other sinful activities, but when we stop these four, then the other sinful activities will automatically fall to the wayside, collapse. One has to be freed from sinful activities to seriously prosecute Krishna consciousness. Yesham tu antakatam papa jananam punyakarmanam te dvandvamoha nirmukta bhajante mam vata. One who's come to the end of all sinful life and is engaged in pious activities can be freed from illusion and duality and engage with determination in the devotional service of Krishna. So, therefore, at the time of initiation, we're required to promise to refrain from these four kinds of illicit activities, sinful activities, illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. Then one becomes anagha, freed from sins. So the Sutta Goswami was praised. You're free from sins. We wouldn't want to hear from a sinful person the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes we see that there are people who are reciters of Srimad Bhagavatam or kirtan singers, professional kirtan singers. And even though they sing very nicely or recite very nicely, they're not free from these four kinds of sins. We know of one big famous kirtan, professional kirtan singer in India, who's known to us to be a drunkard. Known to us to be a drunkard. Although he, you know, makes many recordings of devotional songs and people ooh and ah over him, we know from personal association that he has an alcohol problem. So these are not the people from whom we should hear. The Srimad Bhagavatam is very sacred literature. It's supposed to be above all cheating and hypocrisy. So a person who's engaged in sinful life can't understand Srimad Bhagavatam, what to speak of explaining it to others. Nirmatsaranam satam. It's meant for those who are pure in heart. Satam, those who are fully dedicated to the absolute truth. But one must be freed from these four sinful activities before one can dare sit on the asana of Srila Vyasadeva. Otherwise it's hypocrisy. And one is performing all kinds of sinful activities and still posing as the representative of Vyas. That's very severely wrong. And we saw there was one, Romaharshan Sutta, who was sitting on the asana his offense was not these four illicit activities, but failing to show respect to the personality of Godhead, Lord Balaram. And for that he was killed, although he'd been placed on the seat by the assembled sages. So the person who sits on the seat of Vyasadeva has a great responsibility. He has a great responsibility. It's a very, just in the material world, to be a judge, one is supposed to be a person of spotless character, because he has to make sober judgments. So he has to be free from any suspicion of corruption and so on. Of course, that's in the mundane field, but because it's a great responsibility. So even greater, the person who's supposed to speak Srimad Bhagavatam has to be free from sinful life. Not hypocrisy, that we speak Srimad Bhagavatam, but in our own life we do all sorts of sinful things. That will be cheating. Kaitavata. Cheating. Just to earn a living by Srimad Bhagavatam, that's also cheating. So one's character should be spotless, free from these vices. And Puranani Cheti Setihasani Chanaka Akyatani Apidhitani. And you should be you're also praised, Sutta Goswami is praised, for reciting and for hearing and reciting the different scriptures. Adhitani, you're well versed, and Akyatani, you can explain the subject matter. One has to become, that's also mentioned in the qualifications for Guru. Tad vijnanartam sa guru meva abhigacchet samit bani shrotriyam ramanishtam. Shrotriyam means well versed. One has to have heard Shruti, from Shruti, Shrotriyam. Shrotriya, one has to have heard the science from the right source and be able to explain it also. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttama uttama shabde pade janishnata brahmani sumpamashu. Same thing, shabde pade janishnata. One should have heard the message of Krishna from the right source. Otherwise, if he simply heard from some professor or he's simply speculating, then he's not the right person to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. One has to hear from the person who's coming in the sampradaya system. Then it will be effective. The Sutta Goswami was expert in Dharma Shastrani, Dharma Shastras, Shastras about religious principles like Manusamhita, Puranani, the Puranas, and Itihasani, the histories like Mahabharata and Ramayana. In the Upanishads, it said that, in the Chantogya Upanishad, it said that the Puranas and Itihasas are the fifth Veda, Panchama Veda. So that means that the Puranas and Itihasas are also a legitimate part of the Vedic canon. There are some who say, no, only the four Vedas. But within the four Vedas themselves, it's said that the Puranas and Itihasas are the fifth Veda. And this fifth Veda is more suitable for Kali Yuga because it explains everything in terms of narrations so that the subject matter will be more easily understood and assimilated. So the Puranas and Itihasas, far from being out of consideration, are more important for Kali Yuga. And among the Puranas, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most important. Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amama Yad Vaishnavana Priya. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada gives more importance here to hearing than to reading. When we discuss Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, then the meaning becomes manifest. Satam prasanga bhamavirya santado avanti hritkarna rasayan katha yashtoshanada apyavarga vartmani Shrittaritir Bhaktir Vinkamishita. When we hear in the association of devotees, the potency of the topics is realized. When we hear in the association of devotees, Satam, the Son of God, the Madhirya, the Son of God. And then the subject becomes very pleasing to the mind and to the heart. Avanti Hritkarna Rasayana. It's relishable subject matter, but the taste of it is realized in the association of pure devotees. Just as music sometimes may be more appreciated when we hear it in the association of other music lovers. Crude example. So the topics of Krishna are realized, are appreciated, are understood when heard and explained in the association of pure devotees. Sanatana Goswami said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I heard that you explained one verse, Atmaramas Chamunio, in how many ways was that?
64.
60, is it 64? So many different ways. 41. So many different ways to Prakashananda Saraswati. Could you also explain that to me? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again explained the Atmarama Sloka. So many different meanings for each verse. Then, after explaining, he said, oh, by your association, I just thought of another meaning for Atmarama. Then he said, actually, Bhagavatam, every word has unlimited meaning. But that meaning is understood, excavated in the association of devotees. So, adhitani and akhyatani. And one gets more understanding by hearing and more understanding by explaining also. When we explain the message to others, we have to think about it. We have to concentrate. When there's a test, you know, you sit in the class, but then when there's a test and you have to explain what you've heard in the class, then you have to really focus. Sitting there, you can listen, not listen. But when you have to explain it to someone else, even if I told you, now I'm going to give you directions, and I want you to repeat those directions to someone else, then you're going to have to listen very carefully. And maybe you'll say, let me see if I've understood you. At the second traffic light, I turn right. Is that it? But you carefully make sure that you've understood the subject because you're going to explain it. If there's anything, if you have to give a talk on some subject, then now you have to study. Now you have to make sure you've understood it. Because what if someone asks you a question? Well, I don't know. You know, I can read from my notes, but if someone asks me a question, I'm lost. No, actually, you have to understand it. Actually, you have to understand it. The person who understands it can explain it. The person who simply can repeat mechanically may not be able to understand properly or properly explain. There's some car mechanic. If he actually understands the guts of the car, he can explain it in such a way that we'll understand. One definition of an expert is a person who can explain things in such a way that even a dummy like me can understand. That's an expert. He can make it so clear that even the simple person can understand it. Yeah, he explains, lady, you see, the trouble with your car is like this. You know, it's like, well, picture like a big, you know, plunger. And imagine that plunger's, you know, like got a leak in it. Or, you know, some way he makes it understandable. Because he's understood it. So he can draw a picture, or he can give an example, or he can explain it technically, whatever, because he's understood it. If he hasn't understood it, he can't do that. He can't do that. One actually has to grasp the subject matter, not just bluff. Sometimes the way we bluff with tests, you know, we get some idea what the questions are going to be, and we write something vague, and we figure that we'll get a C, at least. Not like that. Actually, we have to understand. We have to understand. So that understanding becomes more solid when we explain. Explaining forces us to think about it. Prabhupada said writing. Also, he said about writing that it forces you to crystallize the subject matter, to concentrate on the subject matter. When you write, you have to really think. So this explaining provides realization for the speaker also. The person who hears is supposed to be enlightened, and the person who speaks is supposed to get enlightenment also by speaking. Shravanam Kirtanam Dishti. Therefore, these methods are given prominence to hear and to explain also. Ahitani, Akyatani.
Both of them. And it's not just intellectual knowledge, but the knowledge is understood by hearing from the right source and by the blessings of the spiritual master. That will be explained in the next verse, that everything depends on the blessings of the bona fide spiritual master. When the spiritual master is pleased with the student will get nice understanding. So the sages offered their praise to Sutta Goswami. We were discussing yesterday what's the right way for inquiring. So the sages show the example. They offer their respects to the speaker, and then they explain also. It's not just, you're great, you're fantastic, you're awesome. But they give their, they state the qualifications that you're qualified because of this reason, this reason, this reason. Not just some empty glorification or some, you know, flattery. But sincerely stating the legitimate qualifications of the speaker. And then placing their relevant questions. That's the method of sitting for spiritual understanding. To hear from a qualified person with all respect and to
ask one's relevant questions. Tadviti pranipati na pariprashne na seveya. Upadekshanti te gyanam gyaninas tatvadarshana. So, Sutta Goswami was a bona fide representative of Vyasadeva, and therefore he saved his Guru Guru to hear from him. Any questions?
Is drinking tea an intoxication?
Is tea intoxication? Yes. Coffee, tea, cigarettes, ups, downs, LSD, marijuana, alcohol. And numerous other pharmaceutical agents for material happiness. This tea, the active ingredient is caffeine and stimulant. Coffee, same thing. Now they're putting it in various kinds of drinks also. What is that? Mountain Dew and some bowl something.
Red Bull,
yeah. You have to read your labels these days because I think even Coca-Cola is caffeine. So that's food these days. Those are drinks. They put stimulants. Originally it was cocaine in Coca-Cola. That went by the wayside. But in any case, these things sort of agitate the mind.
What if the tea doesn't contain any caffeine?
Yeah, then rosehip tea or these herbal teas, and they're all right. Yes?
I have three questions. One of them I actually like to know. I'll ask the first. Number four, it's a speculative gambling of all sorts. Mm. So would that be the stock market?
Yeah, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu has a quip that this is the one rule that everybody figures they're following, and it's the one rule that probably a lot of people are breaking, or one of the rules a lot of people are breaking. So the stock market question comes up a lot. I haven't heard Srila Prabhupada directly speak about it. But my understanding is that when it becomes a kind of high-risk game, then it's definitely gambling. There are investments that are done in a sober sort of fashion to maintain a steady value by placing money in stocks with the idea of making more than one might make by regular bank interest. One studies the company and one invests soberly. So there's risk in everything. There's risk when you walk out the door. If you start a business of your own, there's risk. Everything has risk. But it's sober. It's not, your expectations are not over the moon. Your expectations are modest. And we'll invest in this company, which has a good history of performance, and we'll expect that over the long term, we'll do well with our investment. And then there's high risk, high stakes investment, where you're hoping you'll double your money or triple it, where you're turning, you hope to flip stocks quickly, and everything's a gamble, and there's a sort of a thrill in risking so much money, but knowing that you might get so much money in return. That's comes within the realm of speculative gambling. Sometimes people even take you know, their savings and gamble it on some hot stock. And then sometimes they lose everything. People are they're seeing big numbers, imagining. So that's gambling. That's gambling. And we see so much trouble is coming in the stock market and so on, because people speculate on enormous profits. The whole .com collapse was based on this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and then I'll have this and then I'll have that. I have one personal acquaintance who was in the business of headhunting, finding IT professionals who could do jobs for various companies that wanted it. And there was a big demand for those professionals, so he became a millionaire. And he invested all of his money in technology stocks, and he became a pauper. So, gambling. Apart from things like chess and dice and the lottery. In the modern age, even the government is encouraging gambling. And it's cheating, because typically the gambling is sponsored with the pitch that this is to benefit the poor. We're going to do things, we're going to provide better education, better housing for the poor people, and for that we'll get money by the state, we'll get money by the lottery. But it's well documented that the people who spend on the lottery are the poor people. The better educated people know that these odds are so bad that there's no sense in spending money on a lottery ticket. But the less intelligent people can be swindled. If you don't play, you can't win. That's one avenue. If you don't play, you can't win. Of course, if you do play, you won't win either, but that's not... That's not mentioned. So it's a kind of swindling. First, the powerful men and corporations take so much from the ordinary working man by his labor. Then they take so much from him by selling him products that he doesn't need, persuading him that he needs so many things he doesn't need. Then they take money from him by taxes. Then they take money from him by persuading him to buy things on credit and charging him usury, usurious interest rates. Actually, it was criminal in previous days to charge the kind of interest rates that banks now routinely charge for credit. But the banks are persuading people, just take this credit card, you're pre-approved, charge to the sky, you'll get frequent flyer miles or a new alarm clock. And people are paying huge amounts of money for interest. So again, they're being cheated. Persuaded to invest in so many things, different kinds of cheating, and then to give their money for the lottery, which is just another way of taking their money out of their pockets. So the government men and others are busy swindling by these different schemes, taking advantage of people's weaknesses. Actually, these are all weaknesses. These are all schemes for taking people's money. Gambling. It's a way that the whole Las Vegas thing, the house always wins. It's not that the guy who goes to Las Vegas and gambles comes out ahead. You know, maybe statistically someone gets something, but at the end of the day, it's the gambling establishment that always comes out far ahead. Similarly, intoxication. The liquor companies make huge profits at the expense of the health, safety, sanity, and well-being of the common man. So much of the state treasury is spent on the consequences of alcohol, from domestic quarrels, criminal things, the hospital bills and healthcare charges, and healthcare charges, criminal activities where, oh, and of course traffic accidents where alcohol is so much to play. But the liquor companies are cleaning up, and the government is taking tax money so that, and the common man is exploited. I was on a train one time with one lady who, in India, who was from a university, and she was investigating, doing research on the consequences of big earthquake, I guess, in Gujarat.
Consequences of what?
Of a big earthquake. I guess it was in Gujarat. And it was a pitiful thing. There had been this enormous earthquake, and people's homes had been flattened, and people were living in the ruins of their former homes. It was a very pitiful situation. So she told me that the central government allocated so many crores of rupees for the welfare of these people, and that the central government gave it to the state government to distribute. And the state government sent it down to the district government. So I figured I had the whole picture by now. You know, at the state level, they scooped so much off. At the district level, they scooped off so much. And so the common guy didn't get it. No, she said, no, actually, what happened was that miraculously, everyone actually got money in their hand. All of those poor people actually got the money in their hand. And then the liquor dealers moved in.
And then the what?
The liquor dealers moved in. And they got everything. Because these people were miserable, distressed, totally bogged down. So the liquor dealers came in. And they're out the money.
In fact, in India, I mean, even here amongst devotees, you know, there were, and even here, not even devotees, there are people who don't drink, and even if liquor dealers came, they're not going to buy liquor.
Yeah, but these were not such highly principled people. They were just ordinary people, and they were miserable. And the liquor dealers came, you know, why should you be miserable? This will solve your problem. And now they had money. Therefore, it's advised that to Shudras, money should never be given. Bhagavatam directs that money should be given to the Brahmins in charity, or to the Kshatriyas as tax, or to the Vaishyas in exchange for goods. But to the Shudras, money should never be given. They should be given clothes, homes, their necessities should be provided, but they shouldn't be given money. We saw, you've been to Detroit, those houses across the street from our temple. They were fixed up by the local council as low-cost housing, and then there was similar new housing made. And within a short time, you know, the houses were ruined again because people are of a low, you know, low nature. So they were given money, but they spent their money on alcohol, and they let some, their homes sort of became, you know, dilapidated and decrepit. So shudras should be nicely maintained, but they shouldn't be given money by spending on alcohol. Intoxication, alcohol, hard drugs. Hard drugs is a huge industry. It's not really chartered. And the government is involved in it up to its neck. That's been partly disclosed. What is that Iran-Contra, where it was found that the government itself was taking profits gained in Latin America and using it to sell drugs in Los Angeles and elsewhere. And the excuse given was that this was for funding clandestine projects. But it's also been suggested that it's really to float the American economy. The amount of money involved in drug traffic is simply enormous. And when you think about it, say take a normal drug company, Merck or Pfizer, one of them, they're actually the biggest investors in government. They spend more money lobbying than anybody else. So they have to spend for research, they have to spend for marketing, they have to spend for manufacturing, they have to spend for government certification, you know, passing all those tests and everything. And still they have so much money to spend on lobbying the government. You know, investing their money to get a favorable outcome for their business from the government. Now you take a business which has, where the product is very low cost, where the markup is huge, where no money is spent for research, where no money needs to be spent for advertising, where no money has to be spent for taxes. How much profitability is there? And how much of the profit can be spent on buying influence in the government? So the amount of government involvement in these this industry is simply enormous. Simply enormous. Intoxication, gambling, the meat industry, we know that practically speaking, the regulatory agencies in the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, or the Department of Agriculture, the authorities are people who were formerly in the industry. They're the same people who were, they not only formerly, but they move in and out. One day you're the head of some big meat packing company, the next day you're the chief regulator, and the day after that, again, you're in charge of some meatpacking company. So it's there are books about it, but the actual level of regulation that goes on in terms of it's inspecting these things and so on is practically criminal. It's that there's not more disease and mad cow and this and that is can be ascribed only to results of past pious activities, or else some other source of good fortune, but certainly not to the government regulators because they just can't keep track of it. And prostitution. Especially if you look at prostitution, meat eating, gambling, and illicit sex, they're all huge industries. Enormous industries. And entire states depend on these industries. The state of Nevada can be taken as an example. The state of New Jersey is another big investor coming a little closer to this coast. You set up an establishment for gambling, naturally there'll be a huge amount of drinking, and prostitution is part of the standard weekend package. So naturally these places become enormous centers of corruption and sinful life. A person goes to a casino and he's a big mover and he's spending money and he's gambling and he's got some, you know, girl from the establishment who's encouraging him to go on buying more drinks and have a good time with her. So the places become super sinful. Super sinful. As soon as there's gambling, there must be intoxication, woman hunting. Eating, of course, goes without saying. So all of these things are going on and encouraged by the state. The state government authorities are very happy. Yes, we're getting so much money. So they're practically, in some countries, it's just practically up front that the government and the mafia are nearly identical. You know, we joke about Kazakhstan or these sorts of places where practically criminals and heads of state are indistinguishable. Russia is notorious these days that criminal elements and government elements are just more or less colleagues, if not the identical people. But the same thing goes on in other countries also, closer to home, where with the amounts of money that go that spin around through such industries, what to speak of direct favors themselves in the form of women and liquor and drugs and what have you. They become enormous centers of criminal activity, and criminals and the government people are not so far away from one another if they're not the same people. Or putting another way, they are the same people. The government men so often are simply crooks, simply criminals. And if people knew what they were actually doing, they themselves would be locked up on the keys, sent over to Afghanistan. Okay.
More than okay.
Yeah, okay. A little more than you asked about.
The other question, one of the questions is, how do you know, you're talking about following, let's see, I can't read what I wrote here. How do you know if someone is following in order to hear from them? You're supposed to hear from the people who are following them.
So their character should be examined. I know in some religious societies, there's sannyasis can't go anywhere without company. I know one young sannyasi, he's going to Oxford University, but there's like a senior person with him at all times. There's a senior person, if he attends a class, if he attends a meeting, there's a senior person with him at all times, just to see that his integrity is not, that there's no opportunity for his integrity to be compromised. So the standard should be that the lives of those who are spiritual leaders should be above suspicion. Sanyasira alpachidra sarvaloke gaya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that if there's one spot on the character of a sannyasi, everyone will talk about it. The way you see a black spot on a white cloth that really stands out. So those who are in the renounced order or those who are spiritual leaders, their standard should be more strict. Not that they, you know, he's got his, he's a sannyasi and he's got this like 22-year-old Nakdek for his secretary, and he's got, you know, all the other sort of facilities of a sense enjoyer. But they should live in a exemplary fashion. That everyone can see, yes, he's, his life is, that he is what he says he is, or is what he purports to be. The among the Christian evangelists, there have been so many scandals, but Mr. Billy Graham has kept his reputation for being above scandal. I happened to see an interview with him in which he mentioned that it's his principle that he's never with a woman alone. He's never with him, never with a woman alone. Doesn't matter who. Because the devil is in the loins.
That's where he is.
That's where he is, yeah. If you were looking for the devil, that's where he is. So, you know, very, that our principle is, we have the same principle. Matra svasra vitra va namavitasana. Okay. Balavan indriya grama vidvansana pikarshati. So, those who are in the renounced order, they should keep themselves away from these things. We don't expect to, we should be careful that their integrity will not be compromised. And those who are followers, they should examine. They shouldn't just lightly accept.
Well, even to examine, I mean, there's only so much
you, so can, much you can examine. So a certain amount of what can be done. You can't even eat, you know, you can't eat a bite of food without a certain amount of trust. You know, how do you know they didn't poison the cucumbers? But that doesn't stop you from trying to understand what it is you're getting. We examine as far as we can. We understand that it's the material world, nothing is certain. But as far as possible, we try to guard against. I mean, there's some things that are just open signs of fraud. Someone's claiming to be God, someone's claiming you don't need to the scriptures, someone's claiming it's got a new philosophy, someone's got, you know, sports cars and little girl secretaries, and someone's this and someone's that, or someone's you know, going around to all the wrong sort of places, and you know, there are certain things that are just like, well, what did you expect? So at least we should be alert to those things, and more, you know, more scrutinizingly, we should see if this person, if he's the Vaishnava, does he chant his rounds? Is he seen to be chanting Hare Krishna, or do we just kind of take it on faith that somehow or other, when no one's looking, he chants his rounds? Do we see that he rises early in the morning? Do we see that he regularly attends programs for spiritual programs, or is it that he's, you know, he's kind of never seen because he's doing something? Does he disappear for, you know, long stretches and nobody knows where he's gone? You know, these sort of things where you say, well, gee, you have to wonder, or does he have, like, you know, his best friend in the world is, you know, some chickadee or other.
Some what?
Chickadee.
Chickadee.
You know, then you have to ask yourself, is everything all right? So we tried to see.
One that you really wanted to know?
Yeah, it's about hearing. You were mentioning about hearing and association, you know, from hearing from the
To hear and explain, you mean this?
To hear and explain is better than just reading.
Yeah.
It should be properly grasped from the right source.
If you hear and explain
by submissive hearing.
It's more important than reading that one can assimilate the knowledge of the previous. Only by hearing and explain. Hearing is called shravana. Okay. Processing. Okay. The hearing. It's better than reading. There's devotees who said that, you know, you should read out loud so you hear. Ever hear any comment on that? Ever hear that? Must have heard.
I never heard that from Prabhupada, that we should, you know, we shouldn't just read, we should read out loud. I never heard that.
That's from Prabhupada.
Hmm?
Okay.
But there's value to hearing. You know, Prabhupada used to sit in his garden and hear Krishna book. So to hear the books read is very valuable.
Right, but even hearing, it seems to be different than just reading to yourself, like hearing out loud, because there's something about Prabhupada's talking about the ear, the sound vibration entering into the ear.
Yeah, hearing is Prabhupada's giving stress to hearing. Reading, you can say, is remembering. You read and you remember. The Prabhupada is giving more importance to hearing.
But I mean, it seems in that, if the hearing is better than just reading, if you're reading out loud, you can hear it. Hopefully.
It would seem, but Prabhupada just never gave us that direction. He said, when you read, make sure that you read out loud. Are you reading out loud? Are they reading my books? Are they reading out loud?
Right. No,
it's never like that. So, it's one of those things where you can take a line from Prabhupada's books and then make a campaign out of that. There are a lot of campaigns that can be made and are made just by taking a line from here or there. But we also have to see what Prabhupada did and what he directed us to do. Make sure you're reading the books out now.
We certainly heard about the transcendental sound.
And it's not that and here Prabhupada says, the attending the classes, that was very important, to attend the classes, to attend the kirtan, to hear, to chant. But there was never instruction that when you read, just make sure that you read out loud. We may sometimes hear some reading out loud, or we may sometimes read out loud. That's very nice, but probably never give an instruction. You have to do it that way.
Okay, well, that's not my main question, wasn't whether we should read out loud.
What's kind of
mainly about the hearing itself compared to the reading?
Yeah, probably gave the great primary sign that the hearing is shravana. And kirtan, shravanam kirtan, Vishnu Prabhupada consistently gives importance to hearing and chanting. Any of the methods may be effective, but hearing and chanting are especially emphasized. Prabhupada said, when a man is sleeping, you know, just put a piece of paper in front of his eyes, it's hearing. Hey, get up. A lot of clocks and all that. All works by hearing. Hearing is very powerful.
Even hearing, and you're not even understanding, has an effect.
Yeah, of course, even reading and not understanding. But it will be effective gradually if we read a little, hear a little, chant a little, it will gradually even take more prasadam. Gradually, there'll be an effect.
I heard explanation that when you read, a subtle sound is generated. Is that bona fide?
I don't know. I never heard that.
brings me also to the point of chanting. You have chanting in the mind, you have loud chanting. So I read some scripture quotes where it said that some mantras are more powerful when they are chanted in the mind, some mantras opposite.
Anyway, I don't know about some mantras, but the chanting Hare Krishna's, especially Krishna of tears and agami, Prashad is chanted loudly. And anyway, we're not, probably never recommended chant Hare Krishna in your mind. Chant in your mind, that's all right. Not as an alternative to chanting out loud. When you're not chanting out loud, then at least in your mind you should be chanting. At night, while you're sleeping, chant in your mind. When you can't chant out loud, chant in your mind, that's good. But it's not that chanting in the mind is recommended over chanting body. Anything else? Yes?
Back to the gambling part.
Mm.
What about when the Kauravas and the Pandavas were gambling?
That's the signature example. The whole kingdom was lost by gambling. So there's, it's meant to be an example. Even if you're Maharaj Yudhisthira, you can lose your kingdom, your wife, yourself, everything. Don't gamble. That's a known addiction that people, there are people who ruin themselves and then, you know, start to pull themselves back together and then ruin themselves again. It's just as alcohol is an addiction and other things are addictions. People self-destruct by gambling. So when they say, well, that's the extreme example, but gambling is not recommended for me. One time we were passing, I was on a morning walk with Prabhupada near 26 Second Avenue. We came around the corner back to the temple and there was a church. On the side of the church there was a big sign, Bingo. I said, what is this Bingo? We explained what it was, that it's a kind of gambler. And Prabhupada said, they allow? He said, well, they encourage Srila Prabhupada. And he just shook his head. Intoxication again, maybe again. What's it sound? Okay. Hare Krishna. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.